Page numbers for the Bible verses that we have up here on the screen. They're up on the screen, but the page numbers are there just in case you're using one of the Bibles here in the seats, just to make it easier to find your way around. So I don't know if anybody actually uses that or not, but it's there just in case you do use these Bibles. If you have your own Bible, don't use the page numbers because it's probably not going to work. You're going to end up like completely lost. So the other thing, what I just added today is because I know for some of you it's kind of difficult finding your way around, and sometimes I go from, like today we're going from Matthew in the New Testament to Deuteronomy near the beginning of the Old Testament. So there's going to be a little bit of jumping around. So what I'm doing now is putting ahead of time, here's where we're headed next. So when you see down in the bottom right corner there where it says Matthew 25, that's a heads up to let you know that's where we're starting, to give you some time to get there so that you're not scrambling to try to catch up.
You rock.
Okay, I do rock. Thank
That's
you.
Good.
So the other thing I just want to remind you of is as we go through this series, we're in that time of year now where there's sickness and it's bad roads and all that kind of stuff. So anytime you miss and you're not able to get here, you can catch up online on the website and the podcast tab there. It has all the stuff that we've been talking about. That's all there. So you can listen online if you want. You can download it if you want. And also the handouts back there that have the verses and some questions if you're in a small group. All that stuff is online as well in the podcast tab. So make yourself available to that if that's something that would be helpful for you. Okay? Good? Everybody good? All right. So here's the deal. Today, we're going to talk about money. Stuff nobody wants to say, right? So, yeah, what's that? Money. Some of you probably watched with interest a few weeks ago the whole episode with Powerball, right? Biggest lottery, like, ever. Biggest jackpot ever. Just below $1.6 billion. It was won, unfortunately, by none of us in here. With all the interest around that, I did some reading about it, and one of the interesting statistics surrounding that whole story is in the kind of the feeding frenzy leading up to the final drawing and the winners. At one point, as people were rushing out to buy tickets, at one point it says they were selling $13,000 worth of tickets per second. $13,000 worth of tickets per second. Which is just another reminder, isn't it, that money is pretty important to us. Money is a very important part of our lives. It's a necessary part of our lives. And a lot of times our lives can become so focused on it that we kind of get off track. It's one of those things where we want to protect what we have and we want to get more of what we don't have. That's usually our attitude towards money. So when it comes to church and you hear that today we're going to be talking about money, usually pastors are all about, instead of getting more, you need to be giving more. So I understand there's kind of some resistance to that. There's kind of I don't really want to go to church today. I'll just pretend I'm sick, you know, or just kind of tune out what he's saying. And I totally get that. I totally understand that. So I want to begin, as we talk about stuff nobody wants to say about money, I want to begin by addressing kind of the main objections to talking about money in church. And I want to just get those out of the way up front. So here's the first one. The first objection is, I don't like it when preachers ask for money. And we've all seen examples of that on television, or maybe you've been in churches like that. And I don't like preachers asking for money. And I totally get that. And I completely agree. So I'm going to promise you today and next week, as we talk about money, I'm not going to ask you to give me anything except your attention. Not going to ask you to give me any money at all. I promise you that. Okay, so we good? So let's put that one aside. Next objection. The second objection people often come up with when it comes to talking about money in church is, I don't want to hear about the church's financial problems. We've all been in those services too, haven't we? You know, it's kind of we've got a budget shortfall and we need this and we got to fix this and we don't have enough money coming in. So everybody dig deep. And here's some Bible verses to make you feel really guilty so that you'll give more, right? We've all been in those services and none of us likes that. So I'm promising you that is not behind anything that I'm saying. That's not the issue at all.
It's like feedback.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it too loud?
I don't know. No, it's helping.
Is it?
There.
Is that better? Was it too close to my mouth?
I think so.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. My wife's over there making faces at me, so anytime that happens, I get a little concerned. So, okay. All right, so the whole thing of, you know, here's where our budget is and our shortfall and we're struggling financially, so you need to give more. I don't agree with that. I don't think that should ever be our motive for giving. Because think about it, if we give because there's a need or a shortfall, then what that means is when everything is going fine, we don't have to give anymore. And I think giving should come from a different place than that. So that's not the focus either. The third objection when it comes to talking about money in church, and I want to spend a little more time focusing on this, is this objection. It's a very common one. My money is my business. It's none of your business. This is a personal thing. It's between me and my bank account or me and my family. You're the pastor. It's none of your business. Your job as a pastor is to talk about the Bible, to talk about the spiritual stuff, the religious stuff, not the financial stuff. So kind of the thing is, well, as a pastor, you're supposed to talk about the Bible. And I agree with that. I agree 100%. My job is to teach what the Bible says. So let's talk about what the Bible says. Some of the parables that Jesus tells. We talked about one of these just a few weeks ago. Remember the story of the lost son? The son who went to his dad, said, Dad, I don't like living here. I don't like living under your rules. Give me my half of the inheritance. And he took his half of the inheritance, went out, made some really bad decisions, and got himself into a desperate situation. You remember that parable that Jesus told, right? At the center of that parable is what? Here's a guy who made some really bad financial decisions. Here's a son who was incredibly greedy, allowed that greed to drive his actions, to drive his decisions, made some really bad decisions with all of the money that he had, and ended up not having any left because he wasted it all. So Jesus addresses attitudes towards money in that parable. Another story that Jesus told was about a guy named Lazarus who lived in abject poverty. And he contrasted him with a very wealthy man whose name he doesn't give. And the parable, he talks about how their decisions, these two men, the decisions they made financially in life had an impact on them throughout eternity. Another story Jesus told was about, and this is a very common story, he told a story about some farm workers who were not happy with their income. They kind of go to their boss and they say, well, you're not paying us enough. We work hard. We've been here all day. We've been working harder. You're paying those guys the same as you're paying us. They don't deserve it. We deserve more. That's kind of like listening to the presidential debates, isn't it? You know, it's like they're not getting enough and they're getting too much. And there's all these complaining going on about how much money or how little money people are making. That's one of the stories that Jesus told. Another story Jesus told was about a successful businessman. A guy who was doing really well. He's building this business and it keeps growing and growing and he's adding more, investing more. He's never content. He always wants more and more and more. And finally, when he gets to the peak of his career, he dies suddenly. And now he's standing before God realizing all of this wealth that I spent my whole life building up, I have no access to it anymore. And he realizes there are things that are far more important than the wealth that we build throughout this life. Those are some of the stories Jesus told. And at the center of those stories, he addresses our attitudes towards money. Jesus also talked about money in other settings outside of the parables. He talked about paying our taxes. He talks about trusting in God the Father to provide for our needs instead of worrying and freaking out and stressing out about it, but trusting God and following him and saying he will provide for our needs. Jesus also talked about when we give. He said it's important that when we give, we do so with the right motives, not trying to draw attention to ourselves, but doing so out of a loving heart and as an expression of worship to God. Jesus talked a lot about money. A lot of the people that Jesus interacted with, many of those encounters were centered around their attitudes towards money. Do you remember a few weeks ago, again, we talked about Zacchaeus? Remember the short little guy? He was a tax collector. He was incredibly wealthy. And the reason he was wealthy is because he was ripping people off, collecting more than he should have in taxes and keeping the extra for himself. And he has this encounter with Jesus. And as a result of that encounter with Jesus, do you remember what changed in his life? The main evidence of the transformation in his life was a changed attitude towards money. Instead of taking extra for himself, now he's saying, I'm going to give to the poor. Instead of ripping off people, he's now saying, I'm going to pay back those who I have been unfair to, who I have cheated. I'm going to give back to them four times the amount that I took from them. So that encounter with Jesus changed his attitude towards money. There was another guy who came to Jesus one day, a wealthy young man came to Jesus and he said, I want to follow you. And Jesus addressed with him the fact that money was number one in this man's life. And the result of that conversation was that that young man sadly chose to continue pursuing money instead of pursuing Jesus. On another occasion, Jesus is at the temple with his disciples, and they're watching as people go up and put their offerings in. And there's these Pharisees, these religious leaders, very wealthy individuals. They're going up, they're putting in large amounts of money. And then this elderly widow walks up and she drops just a couple of coins in the basket. And Jesus says, "That's it. That's what God's looking for." And the disciples are like, "What are you talking about? She only put a few pennies in." And Jesus said, "Exactly. That's all she had. Those guys who gave huge amounts, they got a lot more at home that they're keeping for themselves. But this woman who gave so little, that was everything she had. She gave far more than any of these others that you've been watching." And so a lot of the people that Jesus interacted with, the focus of their interactions had to do with their attitudes and how they handled money. Some of the most well-known sayings from the scriptures have to do with money. Jesus said, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." He also said, "No one can serve two masters. You'll love one and hate the other. You cannot serve both God and money." And Jesus' brother, James, one of the most misquoted verses in all of Scripture in the book of James, he did not say that money is the root of all evil. He said the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. On and on it goes. Those are just a few examples I've given to you. But the point that I'm making is very simply this. The Bible has a lot to say about money, about our attitudes towards it, how we handle it, how we mishandle it, what to do, what not to do. The Bible addresses this over and over again. So the point is this. If my job as your pastor is to teach the Bible, if we're looking into Scripture, we have to talk about this. Because the Bible talks about it quite a bit. And I would be failing God and failing you if we didn't take time to address this issue. It's such a central part of our lives. And our relationship with Christ and our trust in what he says in the scriptures should determine our attitudes and our values when it comes to finances. So with all that being said, we're going to take a look at one of the parables that Jesus tells as it relates to money. So we're in Matthew chapter 25. Hopefully I've given you enough time to get there by now. It's been a little while, so hopefully you're all there. And my microphone keeps cutting in and out, doesn't it? So I'm just going to go ahead. Can you guys hear me okay without it? Okay. Say yes if you can't hear me. Say yes, we can. Okay. All right, good. Okay, so we'll just kind of put that aside. Here we go. Matthew 25, we're going to start in verse 14. "Again, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip." Let me stop there. Notice what Jesus says as he introduces this story. The kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by this story. In other words, Jesus is saying, what I'm about to tell you gives you some insight into what's going to happen in eternity, in the future. When that time comes that our time on this earth is over and we see him face to face, Jesus is saying this story is going to give you an idea of some of the things that will happen at that time. He says the kingdom of God is like this. And then he tells this story, the story of a man going on a long trip. "He called together his servants and entrusted his money to them while he was gone. He gave 5 bags of silver to one, 2 bags of silver to another, and 1 bag of silver to the last, dividing it in proportion to their abilities. He then left on his trip. The servant who received the 5 bags of silver began to invest the money and earned 5 more. The servant with 2 bags of silver also went to work and earned 2 more. But the servant who received the 1 bag of silver dug a hole in the ground and hid the master's money. After a long time, their master returned from his trip and called them to give an account of how they had used his money." All right, let's stop there. Again, Jesus begins this story by saying, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. This story gives you some insight into what to expect in the future. Now, as we talked about before, in the parables, most of the parables Jesus tells, somebody in the story represents God, and somebody in the story represents you and me. So as you look at this story, who do you think represents God in the story? The master. All agree? The master who entrusts his servants with his possessions and says, you take care of it while I'm gone, but I'm coming back. Who do you think the servants represent in the story? Us, right? So if that's true, if God is the master in the story and you and I are the servants in the story, well, that has some pretty strong implications for us about our possessions. Because in the story, what the servants have doesn't belong to them. It belongs to the master. What the servants have is something the master gave to them for a time. And at one point, he came back and they had to give an account to him for how they used what he had, what he owned and entrusted them with. So if that holds true, again, Jesus is saying, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. This is what happens in the future. What that means, if this parable has to do with you and me, what it means is everything you and I have, ultimately it belongs to God. And at some point in the future, you and I will stand before him and give an account to him for how we have used what we have. Let me just show you a couple of key phrases in this parable that I think illustrate the point. Notice it says here that the master entrusted whose money to them? His money. It says that the master gave 5 bags of silver to one, 2 to another, 1 to another. He gave it to them for a time. It came from him into their hands for a period of time. Notice it says that one of the servants hid whose money? The master's money. And then it says he came back and he called them to give an account of how they had spent his money. So the overwhelming point in all of this story shows us that what these servants had didn't belong to them. The master handed it to them, said, I'm going to be gone. I want you to manage this on my behalf while I'm gone, but I am coming back. So this brings us to today's big idea. The main point I want to drive home today, and everything else is going to build on this. Here it is. The big idea today is this. Everything I have belongs to God. I don't own it. I manage it. All of my possessions, all of my income, all of my money, everything that I have, it belongs to him. It's on loan to me. I have it right now, but I don't own it. Ultimately, it belongs to him. And my job is to manage it on his behalf in a way that honors him and serves his purposes. Now, part of the problem that comes up, and one of the ways that we get ourselves into trouble, whether it's overspending or going way into debt or greed and selfishness and all of those things, I believe at the root of many of those problems is the fact that we think we own what we have. That's just kind of a basic belief, especially in a free market society like the one in which we live. We have this idea that everything we have, our car, our house, our bank account, whatever it is, that we own it, and therefore we get to do whatever we want to with it. And we kind of categorize things of, here's the religious part of my life over here. This is when I go to church and when I read the Bible and pray and do the spiritual things. And then here's the financial stuff. And those two have nothing to do with each other. And the reality, according to Scripture, is they have everything to do with each other. Because the truth is that everything I am and everything I have belongs to him, and I owe it to him. Now, we're going to take a look at a couple of verses from the Old Testament that really drives this point home. Deuteronomy chapter 8. And we're going to start in verse 11. Let me just kind of set up what's happening here. Israel has been in slavery for 400 years. In Egypt. Moses shows up. God appoints him as the man to deliver his people out of their slavery. Moses comes and there's all these amazing things. The miracles. There's the plagues. There's the parting of the Red Sea. And now they've been in the wilderness for 40 years. And they're about to go into their own land. For the first time as a nation, Israel will have their own land. This is a huge moment in their lives. And Moses, before they enter the promised land, as they're preparing for all of this, Moses gives them some warnings and says to them, there's some things you need to know ahead of time. You've got some huge blessings coming your way. But I need to give you some warnings as well. Notice what he says, starting in verse 11. He says, that is the time to be careful. Beware that in your plenty, you do not forget the Lord your God and disobey his commands, regulations, and decrees that I am giving you today. Let me just stop there. How many of you know how true this is? That in those times when things are going well for us, When we are experiencing blessings and positive things, it's very easy for us to forget God. It's real easy for us to pursue God, to spend a lot of time in prayer when we have needs, when we have struggles, when things are not going our way. We tend to really pursue God then. But when we see those answers to prayer, and when all of our needs are met and things are going well, it's very easy for us to just kind of push God aside and just kind of ignore him, because in our minds, we don't really need him. And that's what Moses is warning them about. He's saying, you're about to enter a land where you're going to have amazing prosperity. Be careful when that happens. You do not forget who got you there to begin with. And then he goes on. Look at what he says. For when you have become full and prosperous and have fine homes to live in, and when your flocks and herds have become very large and your silver and gold have multiplied along with everything else, be careful. There he says it again. Be careful. Notice what he says is going to happen. When they get to the promised land, he says you're going to be full. You're going to have all the food you want. You're going to become prosperous. You're going to have all the wealth you could ever need. You're going to have nice homes to live in. That's completely new for them. They've been in the desert for 40 years. You're going to have your flocks and your herds. They're going to multiply. So your source of income is going to grow bigger and bigger and bigger. He says your silver and gold are going to multiply, not just add up, but multiply. So they're about to experience a time of incredible prosperity. And he says, when that happens, be careful. Be careful of what? Here's what he warns them about. Do not become proud at that time and forget the Lord your God who rescued you from slavery in the land of Egypt. He says, when all this comes into your life, when you start experiencing these blessings, all of this prosperity, all of these answers to years and years of prayer, don't forget the God who got you there to begin with. And over the next couple of verses, he reminds them of some of what God has done for them. For 40 years, they wandered around in the wilderness. And he says, as we were in the desert for 40 years, just remember, God kept you alive all that time. For 40 years in the desert, God, think about this. God provided food for about 1 million people in the desert for 40 years. God provided water for about 1 million people in the desert for 40 years. For 40 years, the Bible tells us all that time that they were in the desert, their clothes didn't even wear out. God provided them. God protected them. God led them into this new promised land. And then he goes on, jump down to verse 17 and look at what he says. He did all this so you would never say to yourself, I have achieved this wealth with my own strength and energy. Remember the Lord your God. He is the one who gives you the power to be successful. So here's what Moses is saying. He's saying, as Egypt is in your rearview mirror, and now the desert is in your rearview mirror, and now as you look ahead to the promised land and all the blessings that come with it, he says, I want to make sure you never come to a place when you see all these blessings, when you experience all this wonderful stuff, I never want you to come to a place where you say, hey, look what I did. Look at all that I've gotten for myself. Look how hard I worked to get myself to this place. He says, remember, God is the one who gave you the ability to build that wealth to begin with. He's the one who brought you out of Egypt. He's the one who brought you safely across the desert. He's the one that provided you with this new land to come into. He is the one, he is the source of everything you enjoy. Another translation says it this way, it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. He's the one who gives us the ability to produce wealth. Now that's a relevant warning for us because we live in a very wealthy nation. And we talk about the value of hard work. And this whole issue addresses what I think is a mindset most of us have. And the mindset is something like this. I worked hard for what I have. I'm successful because of all the work that I've done. The food on the table, the roof over our heads, the clothes that I have those things because I worked hard. God didn't have anything to do with it. God didn't just drop this stuff in my lap. I worked hard to get what I have. And it's good that we work hard for those things. That's important and that matters. But what Moses is saying is this. Who gave you the ability to work hard to begin with? Who gave you a physical body that you could use to work and to earn an income? Who gave you health and strength so you could have a job? Who gave you the ability to learn skills and abilities so that you could earn that income? Who gave that to you? God gave that to you. You didn't do that for yourself.
Or we might say, well, I'm wealthy because I'm wise. I made good decisions. I invested wisely. I studied. I learned. I watched things. And that's why I am where I am today. And Moses says to us, well, who gave you the mind to begin with? Who gave you wisdom and insight? Who gave you the ability to learn new things and to apply those lessons to everyday life? God gave that to you. You didn't do that yourself. God provided that for you. Well, my wealth came from my family because my dad worked hard and my granddad worked hard and they passed it down to me and it's my inheritance. And that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But did you choose your family? Like before you were born, did you decide what family you were going to be in, or did God choose that for you? And the whole point Moses is making here is this. Everything we have, our abilities, our health, our strength, our wisdom, the ability to work and to earn for ourselves, to have an income, life itself, all of it comes from him. All of it comes from God. It's a gift from him. Everything I have belongs to him. I don't own it. I manage it on his behalf. It is on loan to me from him for a time. Now, here's the thing. If I really believe that, this message, hopefully you're getting the idea today. The message, this is not a message about giving. I'm not here saying you need to give more. That's not the point. The point is our attitude towards money. But I'm going to talk about giving just for a minute. Whether it's giving to the church or giving to a need or a charitable organization, here's the question. If I really believe that everything I have belongs to God, if I really believe that, then the question is no longer, how much of my money should I give to God when I see that need? That's not the question, is it? If I really believe that it belongs to him, the real question I should be asking myself is this. How much of God's money should I keep for myself? That's the real question, isn't it? If it belongs to him, if he owns it and it's on loan to me, the real question I should ask is, if God owns it all, am I managing it in a way that honors him? Am I managing it in a way that serves his purposes? And all of a sudden, everything changes because if he owns it all, then the truth is every spending decision is a spiritual decision. Every financial decision is a spiritual decision. It's not a thing of God's over here in this box that I take out on Sundays and my finances are over here Monday through Friday. That's not how it works. If it all belongs to him, everything I do financially, my decisions, they have an impact on my relationship with Christ because it belongs to him and I'm accountable to him for what I do with his money. So this has to do not just with what we give. This has to do with what we do with the rest of it as well. That matters to him. That's important to him. And one of the things, we're going to jump back into this parable in Matthew 25 in a second. But one of the things that this story shows us is this. That how we manage what he has entrusted us with, that will have an impact on what eternity looks like for us. Now, let me clarify what I mean by that. It's not a thing of how we manage our money determines whether or not we go to heaven. That's not the issue. You can't buy your way into heaven. And you can't spend your way out of heaven. It doesn't work that way. Salvation is a free gift that God offers to us, regardless of our income, regardless of what we do financially. Salvation is a free gift that God offers to us because of what Jesus did for us on the cross. It's a gift that we simply reach out and receive by faith in him. But the Bible also talks about the fact that when we get to heaven, once we are there, there are differing levels of blessing. There are differing levels of reward. There are differing levels of responsibilities when we get there. And some of that has to do with what we do with our possessions here and now. Let's take a look, Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 20. And let's pick up the story where we left off. So the master comes back. And now the servants have to give an account. Here's what it says. The servant to whom he had entrusted the 5 bags of silver came forward with 5 more and said, Master, you gave me 5 bags of silver to invest, and I've earned 5 more. The master was full of praise. Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together. So the master says to him, you've done good. I'm proud of what you did. You made a good decision in how you handled what I entrusted you with. So now I'm going to give you even more responsibility. That's a reward. That's not a curse. It's not like now I'm going to make you work harder. Look at it as kind of as a promotion, as kind of you've shown that you're faithful with this. So now I know I can trust you with more. And then he talks about celebrating. Now, again, remember, as Jesus introduces this story, he says, the kingdom of heaven is like this. This story gives you insight into what the afterlife looks like for you and for me when we see him face to face. The kingdom of heaven, he said, is like what happens in this story. And in this story, there is reward based on what we do with what we have. One of my favorite lines from one of the best movies of all time, Gladiator. Maximus is rallying his troops. They're getting ready to go into battle. And as he's rallying the troops and preparing them for what is to come, one of the things he says to them is this: what we do in this life echoes in eternity. I like that. What we do in this life echoes in eternity. In other words, the decisions we make here and now, they can have an impact on what happens throughout eternity. And that is true in how we handle our finances as well. The way we handle what we have now can have an impact throughout eternity. Let's take a look at another place where Jesus addresses this, Luke chapter 16, starting in verse 10. Look at what he says. If you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you are dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. Another way of saying it is this. Let's say you're working for a large corporation and you have a small responsibility. Let's say you work in the mailroom. So you have some responsibility, but it's a fairly small responsibility. And you're working in the mailroom, and while you work in the mailroom, you are stealing stuff. You're like opening letters and taking checks out and keeping them for yourself. You're opening packages and taking stuff you want. You're stealing all kinds of stuff from the company. And the owners discover that you've been doing this. Would it make sense for them to come to you then and to say, hey, you've been working here a long time. We've noticed you've been stealing a lot of stuff from us. We've decided we're going to have you be the CEO of the company now. Would that make any sense? No, because you've demonstrated you're not trustworthy, right? You've shown that in the small area of responsibility you had, you weren't trustworthy. They're not going to give you a bigger area of responsibility because they know that they can't trust you. And Jesus is saying the same thing is true with what we do with what we have. And then he goes on and says this: if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who will trust you with the true riches of heaven? Now, when the Bible talks about heaven, it does not portray heaven as, you know, kind of like you see in the cartoons. In the cartoons, you see, you know, people are in heaven and they're like, they got these tiny little wings on their back and they're floating around in a cloud playing this tiny little harp. You've seen that? That's not heaven. That would be hell, right? That's not an enjoyable, that's not what heaven is all about. The Bible has a lot to say about what heaven is like and the things that are happening there. There will be worship happening there. There will be feasting and celebration happening there. As we saw last week, the Bible says there's going to be great food. There's going to be fine wine. There's going to be celebration and enjoyment in the presence of God. And the Bible also says at different places that we will have some level of authority, some level of rulership. And it also says that there will be different responsibilities. And again, not responsibilities as in you have to go do this job that you hate doing, but think of like what it is you were created to do. That thing that, man, if I could have any job in the world, this would be it. If I could do anything for a living, I would gladly do this and not have to be paid for it because I love doing it so much. The Bible talks about those kinds of things. There will be things that we are doing there. It's not just sitting around singing hymns all day. There are things that we're going to be doing that are going to be fulfilling to us because it's part of what God created us for. And the point that Jesus is making in these stories is this, that how we handle what we have now, whether we hoard it to ourselves, waste it on useless things, or use it wisely, how we use what we have now has eternal implications. And again, back to the big idea for today. Everything I have belongs to God. I don't own it. I manage it for Him. And how I manage it, how I use it, that matters. So here's one last question I want to address. Why does it matter? Why does God care what you and I do with the money we have, the possessions we have? Why does He care about our attitudes towards money and possessions? Why does that matter? Does God need more money? Is that what this is all about? The answer obviously is no. The reason this matters to God is very simple. Because how we handle money and possessions reveals where our heart really is. You see, God is not interested in money, but He most definitely is interested in your heart more than anything else. In this passage in Luke chapter 16, Jesus closes it out by saying this, verse 13, "No one can serve two masters, for you will hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." That is the issue. How we handle our possessions, how we handle the money that we have, shows if God is our master or if money is our master. That is demonstrated by the decisions we make. If I'm constantly thinking about money, how to protect what I have, how to get more of what I don't have, if that is my focus and I'm constantly thinking about that, then what happens is that means money is my master and God gets pushed aside, and that matters to Him. The issue is not money. The issue is not the dollar sign. The issue is not the bank account or the bottom line. The issue is your heart. That's the issue. God doesn't need your money. God doesn't want your money. What He wants is your heart. And what you do with what you have reveals where your heart is. And so this morning, as we close out the service, we have an opportunity to give. And I want to encourage you this morning, if we could, starting today, when it comes to this part of the service, if we could look at this as an act of worship. Instead of looking at it as, you know, sometimes we tend to look at it as, oh, that's that time of the service again. Or we look at it as, well, I guess I better put something in, or I'll feel bad. Or somebody will look at me funny if I don't. Or we look at it as, well, I'll put this in to help pay the bills. None of that is what this is about at all. When we give back to God, whether it is here in church or giving to a charitable organization or stepping in when we see a need in someone's life, when we give to God, let's look at that as an act of worship, an expression to Him of thanksgiving. And ultimately what we're saying to Him is this: when I give to God, here's what I'm saying. God, I do this recognizing and to remind myself, You are my master. My possessions, my money, they will not master me. You are my master. And as I give to You, this is a reminder to me that everything I have and everything I am, it belongs to You. And part of my job as a follower of Christ is to manage what You have entrusted me with wisely. And giving back to You, God, that's not the only way I do that, but that is one of the ways that I wisely manage what You have entrusted me with. So as we give this morning, let's do so as an expression to Him. God, I recognize You are the owner, You are the master, and I simply want to serve You and thank You and honor You for Your goodness in my life.